Welcome back to World Review Commentary. I'm your host, George Butler, along with my guest host,
Charlotte Littlefield.
We have a fine guest coming up next. His name is Bryce Lockwood, and he was actually on the USS Liberty when it was attacked off the coast of Israel in 1967. Welcome to the program, Bryce Lockwood.
Thank you, George. Charlotte, appreciate it.
Hi, Bryce.
Well, we certainly appreciate you being part of our program this morning. We are actually set up right across from the Vietnam War Memorial in the park here, and there is just a swarm of people here, very reverent, very respectful of our military dead that we have lost in the past. We have a gentleman coming through here, a corporal, Spec 4, actually, in a wheelchair. He's being pushed by his relatives and friends. And highly decorated vests, and we want to pay respect to all of those people. And Bryce, you were a veteran too yourself. Tell us your story.
Well, I was stationed aboard the USS Liberty in 1967. We were assigned to oversee the impending war between the Arabs and the Israelis in June of 1967. Little did we realize that the Israelis would pick us for a target. It seems that on June 8th of 1967, the Israelis had captured an entire Egyptian brigade, somewhere in excess of 850 men, forced them to dig their own graves, and then brutally murdered them all. At just about that time, the USS Liberty showed up off El Arish on the Sinai Peninsula. Needless to say, the Israelis pretty well had to do something to cover up their crime, so they attacked the USS Liberty.
Well, I tell you, how long did the attack go on, Bryce?
Nearly 2 hours. They attacked us for quite some period of time with a French-made Mystere aircraft, dropped napalm on us, rockets, heavy caliber cannon fire. Then sent 3 motor torpedo boats out to finish off the job, sent 2 helicopters over. The Israelis claimed that they were to pick up any survivors that happened to fall into the sea or jump into the sea, but the truth of the matter is those 2 helicopters were loaded with fully armed troops, and the only thing they were after was to finish the job in case someone happened to live through the mess.
Were there war crimes committed, in your opinion, during this attack?
I'm sorry?
Were there war crimes committed during this attack?
Oh, yes, definitely. To begin with, you just don't shoot at a ship at sea without identifying it. We were clearly flying the American flag. The Israelis claim that they didn't see it or it was not existent, but the truth of the matter is they did their best to shoot it down. When another one was run up, they tried to shoot it down. And finally, a third flag was run up, which was the post flag. It's the largest flag you have at ship, over 13 feet long, impossible to not see it. Excuse me, the letters on the side of the ship, GTR-5, stood for General Technical Research, the 5th and newest ship of her class at the time. You just don't shoot at a ship at sea without looking up those numbers in Jane's fighting ships, and they would have plainly known that it was a non-combatant and just absolutely not doing anything but out there keeping track of what was going on.
Right, Bryce, it's my understanding, okay, you just said they hit you with napalm?
Yes, they did. They
yeah,
dropped napalm on our, we had some davits that contained automatically inflatable life rafts. There was a lanyard with a small explosive charge. You just jerked on the lanyard, it would fire the explosive charge and spit out these life rafts and automatically inflate them. And Israelis dropped napalm on that. There was nothing left of them. They riddled all of our lifeboats. We only had one lifeboat, or actually which they called in the Navy a Liberty launch and the Captain's launch. They riddled those with heavy caliber cannon fire, so they were just like a sieve, Swiss cheese. Then we finally had 3 of the old World War II type cork life rafts, roughly 5 feet by 8 feet cork life rafts with nylon webbing in between. 3 of those were carried and put over the side to put our most seriously wounded on. These Israeli motor torpedo boats fired up and shot all of them and carried them away. I remember one of the men coming back into the radio shack and saying, I don't know what we're going to do now. We don't have any way of getting off now.
Bryce, is it true that the signal was blocked? That
yes.
You guys sent out distress signals?
Yes, we had six distress frequencies. The Israelis apparently only had the capability of blocking five. They were jamming five of our distress frequencies. And the aircraft shot up all of our transmitting antennas. None of them worked. We had one antenna that had not worked the entire cruise, and it had a big shot hole in it. A couple of radio men went up there and strung a wire to it, tuned it up, and by golly, it worked after that big old shell hole in it. And got off of Mayday to the U.S. 6th Fleet. I was lying right there listening to it. Firefox, Firefox, this is Rockstar, Rockstar, under attack by unidentified surface and naval air units. Require immediate assistance. And as soon as Carrier Saratoga acknowledged our Mayday, the shooting stopped.
Bryce, there was probably more than one book, but the only book I'm familiar with is The Assault on the USS Liberty by James Ennis.
James Ennis, Jr.
Ennis, yes. For the listening audience, that book gives us a direct account of the assault.
It reads like a James Bond novel. It is just, if you're interested in military reading at all, it is just an excellent, easy reading, exciting book. I would not suggest that anyone read it before they go to bed, because when they find out what happened, they'll be so angry they won't be able to sleep.
Bryce, there was a recent, there was an article in the Chicago Tribune, was it?
Yes.
And there was also a response to that, I suppose. Can you tell me the latest you know about the Chicago Tribune article on the USS Liberty?
The article was in the Chicago Tribune on October the 2nd of this year. John Crutzen is a Pulitzer Prize-winning author. He did extensive research. He interviewed people literally around the world. He found numerous U.S. military people that were listening in on the communications between the Israelis and our ground control station, definitely identifying it as a United States ship, definitely identifying that it was flying the American flag, and yet they were ordered by the ground controller to shoot on it anyway. On October the 30th, there was a meeting, a Tuesday evening meeting, at the Intercontinental Hotel in Chicago. Michael Hayden, who is the General Michael Hayden, who is the current director of the Central Intelligence Agency, was a guest speaker for the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. I was an invited guest along with two other Liberty survivors, Stan White, a retired Master Chief Petty Officer of the U.S. Navy. He was the senior enlisted man aboard the USS Liberty, and Ernie Gallo, who was an electronics repairman aboard the Liberty. The three of us were guests of a couple of members and one other person who were traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. They paid our way to get there, put us up in a very nice hotel, and had us as guests of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. The general talked about activities and directions of the current CIA. Afterwards, there was a question and answer session. And Mr. Dan Egan, who was our sponsor for the program, held up his hand at the question and answer session, and he was called upon. And he said, General, in view of the recent Securities Revelation Act that was passed, I'm not sure that's the exact title, but he wanted to know, would it be possible for the agency to release any and all information concerning the events of June 8, 1967, when 34 Americans were killed and over 170 were wounded by Israeli defense forces? He never mentioned the USS Liberty. I thought it was pretty interesting if the general shot right back. I presume you're talking about the USS Liberty incident.
Welcome back to World Review Commentary. I'm your host, George Butler, along with guest host
Charlotte Littlefield.
Welcome back to our program, Bryce Lockwood.
Thank you, sir.
You know what just fell down on my notebook computer? A maple leaf. I think God's overseeing this broadcast, man.
All of the Washington, D.C.
Yeah, a maple leaf right on my computer, my notebook.
Beautiful hair.
I had to ask Charlotte what kind of leaf it was. I'm not that good
at it. Texas. I've lived north, so.
Well, you know, we've got a lot of cedar trees in Austin, Texas, but we don't have the beautiful trees they have up in the northeast area.
So, as you were finishing.
Go ahead, yeah.
I had just mentioned that I had been an invited guest at a meeting with General Michael Hayden that was sponsored by the Chicago Council on Global Affairs on October the 30th. And the gentleman that invited me had just been invited to ask a question of the general, and he commented about a previous meeting in which the general had indicated that the agency was trying to declassify things as much as possible. And therefore, would the agency release any and all information concerning events of June 8, 1967, in which 34 Americans were killed and over 170 wounded? And the general shot right back, and he said, I presume you're talking about the USS Liberty incident. And he said, as you know, when I was director of the National Security Agency, I released all of the intercept tapes of the helicopter pilots. Without committing himself to anything, he indicated that both sides claimed that it proved their point that the attack was either accidental or on purpose, and then dropped it.
So okay. Boy, I'll tell you, there's how long have you been working on trying to get the truth out on this, on the USS Liberty?
Oh, probably 20 years. We were ordered to silence, so it was in the early years after the attack up until, the early 1980s. It was just, you didn't dare talk about it because you were afraid that you were going to be arrested and sent off to Fort Leavenworth, Kansas for life in prison. And the whole of it was the Johnson administration ordered a clamp on the entire thing, and we were ordered to never talk about it.
Was President Johnson the one that ordered the fighters back from the carrier?
Yes, he was. Actually, it was Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara. When Admiral Geis, who was the commanding officer of the U.S. 6th Fleet in the Mediterranean, challenged the fact that Secretary of Defense McNamara had ordered the rescue aircraft back, Admiral Geis challenged that. He said, I exercise my right to hear that from the highest authority. And Secretary McNamara said, here's the president. President Johnson says, get those aircraft back. I don't care if the ship sinks. I will not have my allies embarrassed. Well, I'd like to know how he knew who was attacking us. The Israelis were using unmarked aircraft, and those of us who were there didn't know who was attacking us.
It's a crime.
Absolutely.
There are many war crimes involved in this attack on the USS Liberty. And you lost some good friends, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I had a very close friend of mine, Ronnie Campbell, that was killed in the torpedo attack. He was literally cut in half by a piece of shrapnel from the torpedo. I was a watch section supervisor. I had three sailors, two Marines assigned to my watch section, and a civilian advisor by the name of Al Blue. Out of those six men, five were killed, including both of the other Marines.
Are you renting them out?
Bryce, for the younger listening audience, this was a little bit of background. This was happened at the start of the Six-Day War, the Israeli Six-Day War.
This occurred June of 1967, the early days of June 1967. We were actually attacked on June the 8th of 1967. War was imminent between the Israelis and the surrounding Arab countries, Syria, Jordan, the Palestinians, and Egypt. And the USS Liberty was sent by the Joint Chiefs of Staff to oversee things. Our interest was not against Israel. As a watch section voice supervisor, I was told by our operations officer, Lieutenant Commander Dave Lewis, that we were not interested in Israeli targets, that we were only after the Russians and the Arabs. If we picked up an Israeli Tiger, we were to identify it and notate it and drop it. Our primary interest was the Russians to make sure that they behaved themselves and didn't get involved.
Didn't they have a nuclear submarine off the coast of Israel at the time?
I understand that,
the Russians.
And I understand that there's a book about that. I'm sorry I don't have those facts right at the top of my head, but there's a book out about that. The commander of that submarine was ordered that if the Israelis used the nuclear weapon in any way against the Russian Arab allies, that Soviet submarine was to make a sea of glass out of the country of Israel.
Right. And so for the history books, this was potentially or possibly what it probably was a false flag operation gone bad. Had they sunk the USS Liberty, the possibility existed that that could have been blamed on the Egyptians or somebody besides the guilty party, besides Israel, to provoke, to get America into the fight.
And excuse me, but the Israelis had a perfectly good excuse already set up. They said that they thought that it was the Egyptian ship, the El Kassir. El Kassir was a World War I class horse transport back in the old cavalry day. El Kassir had not gone to sea for over 20 years, was absolutely unworthy of going to sea, and was waiting to be cut up for scrap. And for the Israelis to use that as excuse is absolutely preposterous. Admiral Tom Moore, who at the time was very shortly after the Liberty incident, was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, stated that the USS Liberty was the ugliest ship in the U.S. fleet, and it was absolutely impossible for anybody to mistake her.
So would that be right, that this is a false flag operation gone bad?
I suppose that's a possibility. Yes, there are several of us crew members that believe that think there's a very good possibility that we were just set up by our own government, and that the Israelis were supposed to just rough us up a little bit and then blame it on the Egyptians. But they got a lot more serious than that.
Well, they ever actually, didn't they overfly the ship for a number of hours earlier before the commencement of the attack?
Yes, there were at least three sorties of overflights of Israeli, those aircraft were marked. And that was in the morning of June the 8th. And they flew so close that there were several of the sailors that just absolutely unworried. I mean, excuse me, we were in international waters 13 and a half miles off the Sinai Peninsula. And absolutely unworried about ever getting involved. Several of the sailors were up there sunning themselves, and they were waving at the Israeli pilots, and Israeli pilots were waving back at us. Excuse me, many of them were trained right here in the United States.
Boy, I tell you, what a tragic thing that happened. You said once that I heard on one of our other programs that they shot a missile, a torpedo in towards the end of the attack to try to sink the ship?
Actually, they fired five torpedoes at us, and that really is what really, really angers me, because it's my understanding that the torpedoes were made in the United States of America, that they were sold to the Italians as war surplus after World War II, Mark IV type torpedoes. If anybody happens to be traveling on I-95 between the Florida and Georgia border, there's a rest area on the northbound side of I-95, and if you go in there, there's a number of memorabilia of military actions, and one of those is a World War II Mark IV torpedo. It's monstrous. And you sit there and look at it, and I sat there and looked at it, and I thought, oh, my God, that's what they fired at us. They were sold a surplus to the Italians. The Italians sold them to the Israelis, and the Israelis used our marvelous foreign aid program to finance firing them right back at us and killing our Americans.
Had that torpedo buried a few inches one way or another, that ship would have gone to the bottom. Is that what you said before?
Yes, there was a part of a major superstructure of the ship, and the torpedo struck directly on the flange of that I-beam that was part of the major structure of the ship. If it had struck either direction, left or right from there, just a matter of a few inches, it would have just ripped the ship to shreds.
Down to the bottom.
Yep. Right to Davy Jones's locker.
online and on demand. This is We the People Radio Network.
Welcome back to our program, Bryce Lockwood. This is George Butler reporting live along with my guest co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield.
We're reporting from the Veterans Memorial, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. We have veterans of all shapes and sizes, varying in age. We have a World War II veteran sitting here at the table with us and a friend of his from Vietnam that we're going to interview at the top of the hour. But Bryce Lockwood, welcome back. Continue your story. That torpedo could have buried a little bit and that would have gone to the bottom, would it not?
Absolutely. And excuse me. Thank you, George. I really appreciate you folks at bringing out the story of the USS Liberty. Has just been absolutely covered up in history. We were ordered not to talk about it. There was a big cover-up by our own Defense Department, ordered by the President of the United States, Lyndon Baines Johnson. And excuse me, but...
A man like you, Bryce... Yeah, go ahead.
No, after you, sir.
Well, men like you made and continued to establish and continue a strong America. We thank you. And for our listening audience, Bryce Lockwood was awarded a Silver Star for his gallantry on board that ship that day during that attack. So we want to thank you, Bryce Lockwood, for your heroic effort.
Oh, you're Charlie Wilkins. Excuse me. I'm in awe of all the folks that are visiting the memorial back there. That memorial is absolutely astounding. And
right now, there's a sidewalk, and we set our table up along the sidewalk. We have a World War II vet sitting at one of our seats or our table, and we have a Vietnam veteran that we're going to interview after the top of the hour, and there's all kinds of veterans surrounding us. This is a marvelous day to pay tribute to our military that have given their all for this country.
And remembrance of those that were killed.
Yes, especially those that were killed, you know.
And those that gave all.
That's right.
Bryce, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome, Charlotte. Thank you.